Hey, Low Code Approach listeners, this is Wendy Haddad. Before we jump into this week's episode, I wanted to let you know that we are starting to plan for the next season, and we want to make sure we hear from you on what is most important and relevant in terms of the topics that we'll be choosing. So if you could open a web browser and pop over to aka.ms/low-code-topic-request, that's aka.ms/low-code-topic-request, all one word. Fill out that brief survey on what topics and what subjects, what guests you might want to hear from. And who knows, maybe it'll make it into the next season of the podcast. Thanks so much and happy listening.
Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of the Low Code Approach. I'm Sean Feeney, a Senior Product Marketing Manager on the Power Platform team. Today I'm joined by...
I'm Wendy Haddad. I'm a Senior Cloud Solution Architect, Delivery Lead, and a former Microsoft customer. And I'm joined by...
Dr. No is here and with us today, standing at 5'9", not a quarter of an inch bigger, rather a unique figure and ready to mix it up. He's the man with the plan and he is known as Ryan Cunningham, VP of Power Apps. Ryan, how are you today?
Oh man, Ken, that intro pumps me up. You know, I've been saying for a long time the next Power Platform swag needs to be like power pants, you know, like snap pants that you can, as you're running down onto the basketball court. I think with an intro like that, it's got
to
happen.
Well, I'm happy to do all of those for you, Ryan, at any time. My services, I mean, I am employed by you also. These are part of my services.
This is the closest I'm going to get to being on any kind of professional sports stage. So we'll take it.
That's how we kick off the next Power Platform conference.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ken doing the, yeah. Ken's the MC introing you all as you walk on.
Solid confidence rock in the background too.
Very awesome. So why do we bring Ryan on today's episode? Well, this is a big topic. We're going to cover Power Apps, what it was, what it is, and what it's going to be. And so as we jump into the first question, Ryan, could you please just give us a high-level explanation of what's the vision behind Power Apps in Power Platform?
Yeah, that's a big question, but I think it's also one that's been evolving over time. You know, I would say the original vision was, and going back many years in Microsoft, even before we launched the product, how do we start to democratize software development so more people can do it? You know, and how do you start to close the gap between a human with a need and instructions to computers? And we've made huge progress at that. You know, more than 20 million humans use a Power App every month. You know, that's a public number Satya has talked about. But I will say the nature of what it means to close that gap is also changing dramatically in this new era of generative AI that we're in. And, you know, tools that, you know, previously were limited to point and click and simple expressions now start to look much, much, much more powerful. And so we're really expanding out, you know, how do we close that gap, not just for, you know, non-professionals, you know, sort of people without a technical background, but what does it mean to actually make professionals much faster as well and build all of our software at a higher level of abstraction? And so, you know, at the same time, the nature of that software is changing. And so I would say, you know, our mission sort of remains that core same value, you know, shorten that gap between somebody who needs to do their job better and actual software that can make it happen. What's really exciting is how quickly the capability and the ability to deliver that in the market is evolving right around us. And we're definitely a big part of that right now.
So Ryan, if I'm double clicking on that a little bit, We've got pro developers, we've got citizen developers in here, but yet all of our marketing positioning talks about the Power Platform as low code. And yet we're doing a lot in the pro code space. Can you talk a little bit about the evolution of that? Did we start for the pro developers? Was this always intended for them? Are they an afterthought in that? And where are we heading?
Yeah, should we still be calling it low code?
Well, you know, Ken may have sat in on a session I did for our internal field teams a week ago, but my New Year's resolution is to stop saying low code. And not because I want to give up on citizen development or non-traditional development by any means. I mean, I think we are stronger there than we have ever been. But I think actually the distinction between these two ends of the spectrum is just disappearing generically in the market. You know, if you look at, you know, all the progress we've made for traditional professional software developers over the last 30, 40 years, all we've been doing is adding layers of abstraction so we don't have to write low-level assembly code. And the ability to do that and deliver high-scale, you know, highly productive software and involve a lot more people around the table we're finally reaching this really interesting convergence point. And I think, you know, if you look at the direction that, you know, traditionally called low-code tools are going, and the direction that generative AI is going, and the direction that, you know, high abstraction, you know, high productivity software platforms are going, they all converge in this future where, I mean, gosh, if in 3 to 5 years, your self-identity as a professional software developer is file new SQL server, build schema from scratch, create a forms over data React app over the top of it, you know, that's going to look increasingly antiquated sort of as a model. You know, it'll become the canning of software. We'll do it for fun on the weekends, but evolved a lot more technology to not have to work at that level of manual interaction anymore. And so I think we are really entering this new phase of what we think of as software. So that's exciting, but I think it means we bring everybody along, right? And I think we're on that trajectory. It's not just about AI. I mean, when I survey, you know, monthly active developers of Power Apps, 27% of them already self-identify as a professional software engineer. Hmm. You know, there's a lot of people using this for high-scale employee-facing applications that it's just reducing time and toil in their day to implement it. And frankly, it is minimizing the technical debt of operating it after the fact. You know, why would you want to build and maintain your own auth integration and your own VM scale and your own, you know, connectivity to these other common services? You know, if that breaks in the middle of the night, you want me to get the call, not, you know, an individual developer sitting in a team. And I think that's why a lot of people are just moving up the stack, and we're going to continue to see software move up the stack in general in the years ahead.
So, Ryan, I have a multitudinous amount of questions after that wonderful amount of information that you just gave us.
Yeah.
But I'm going to channel my inner Chub Rock right now and say that Copilot last year was a shock for many individuals.
Yes.
My question is, I'm going to try and tie this together. What we've seen throughout Power Platform conferences is that many individuals approach us and talk about, oh my goodness, this platform has transformed my life, my career. We've heard from folks as old as, I think, maybe 12, yep. I think, is the youngest I've heard. The oldest I think I've heard from myself is maybe 78,
wow.
Who's saying that we've given them new lease on life.
Yeah.
So question for me is, how has artificial intelligence really evolved the Power Platform? And what role is it now going to play in not just the evolution of the platform, but let's talk a little bit maybe about the careers and the possibilities for individuals and the opportunity for AI assistance.
Yeah. And I would say it is still evolving. You say evolved is definitely, you know, we're right in the thick of it right now. But already, you know, this isn't just about cool things on a LinkedIn feed and roadmaps. I mean, Power Apps and Power Automate, both generally available now with Copilot for makers, globally available as well. In fact, we're now on by default, not just in the US, but in the EU, in Australia, and a bunch of other places where you have data center support. You can opt in anywhere globally. And we're even rolling out language support for a whole bunch of languages beyond English. So it's becoming really widely available right now and used by a significant portion of people building apps and automation and having a big impact. I mean, Power Apps makers today who build their first app over Dataverse using Copilot, more than 60% more successful on their first try than people using point and click. Power Automate makers who start with Copilot, 72% more likely to have a successful running flow after their first week than people who start with point and click, and twice as fast at the same task. You know, and these are on top of what is already by far the most successful and widely adopted low-code tools in the market. And I think that's just a huge accelerator already, right? And you start to see these really interesting stories of, you know, people who, you know, even a year ago were turned off by or not, you know, willing to kind of invest the effort in learning the tools when they were purely point and click and type on keyboard, but now are getting much more comfortable in a Copilot world and using it as a teaching tool. You know, we published a great story on the Power Automate blog, and I think Ashley was actually at the Power Platform conference. This woman, you know, is a CPA, a certified public accountant, who, you know, has sort of completely transformed the way that she does her job and is so thrilled about it. She's talking to all kinds of other people about it and sharing it. We published another great story about a woman in Tokyo who first job out of college was basically sitting next to a fax machine at a food manufacturing plant and food container manufacturer and waiting for orders to come in on a fax machine and manually keying them into like a legacy Siebel Systems terminal, and was like, God, there's got to be a better way to do this. And starts, you know, finding Power Platform, specifically found some of the early GPT integrations in Power Apps where you could translate natural language into PowerFX expressions, use that to learn PowerFX, not only, you know, really advanced her career at that company, she now works at a partner in Japan helping other Power Platform customers succeed. So completely changes career. So we start to see Copilot not only as a tool for broadening out accessibility of the platform, but also as a teaching and a learning tool to build skills. And that's pretty cool. And I think just one of the early examples of that human AI partnership on top of the platform that's going to drive a lot more change in the market as we go.
That is awesome. I love hearing stories like that about how careers are being changed. And so I'm going to pivot a little bit to product now. So as we see Copilot being integrated in Power Platform more and more, one topic that comes up a lot is extensibility, right? So let's take data from third-party services and first-party services within Microsoft, and also building end-to-end solutions across the entire Power Platform stack. No longer like my Power Apps expert or my Power Automate expert. I have to build solutions across the end of the spectrum here. How do you see Copilot further being integrated into Power Platform and the extensibility components to help people build richer, more enterprise solutions?
Yeah, that's super important to us. You know, I would say, you know, the big difference between, you know, sort of the Copilot that you get in M365, Microsoft 365, which will come out of the box and, you know, help you build a PowerPoint or a Word document or retrieve data. And what we do in Power Platform is really that customizability and that enterprise grade, you know, sort of nature, everything that comes around shipping an enterprise grade business app, you know, when you do customize it, and they're intimately connected. You know, every customer who buys the Microsoft 365 Copilot gets Copilot Studio to be able to customize additional responses and add additional data sources. But then if I want to go build my own custom Copilot, you know, a completely isolated Copilot over very specific skills, plugins, and data sources, I can use Copilot Studio for that as well. When I go into a Power App and I add an app Copilot to that app, what it's doing is it's creating a Copilot Studio project behind the scenes that I can then model independently. All of those assets are already solution aware. Just I put them in a Power Platform solution. I can run them through a Power Platform pipeline. I can apply rules to them. I can, you know, use all the same role-based access control model that I would put over my existing Dataverse data or other systems. You know, so we're not reinventing the wheel here from a enterprise readiness perspective or a more advanced developer addressability perspective. We're really folding it into the systems that already exist and are already very robust. And even if you look at Copilot Studio as a product, you know, that's a direct evolution of Power Virtual Agents, which itself is built on top of the Azure Bot Framework. That stack is powering already some of the largest bots on the planet, including the Microsoft support bot. So, you know, there's a huge asset and benefit to doing this in the context of these mature services at Microsoft, and yet also really reimagining them in the era of generative AI at the same time.
Right. You gave a great example earlier when you said that the individual used Copilot to sort of reverse engineer their learning, if you will,
yep.
Right? Where they used Copilot to then, you know, write the PowerFX expressions, and then they used that as a learning mechanism,
yep.
Right? To learn how to write PowerFX. So my question is, what resources would you recommend for someone learning, looking to learn about Power Apps and Power Platform?
Yeah. Well, gosh, we've got lots of them. I suppose number one is you can listen to this podcast. But I'll put in a plug for the home team here. But a short second is, you know, we've got some great material from a learning perspective and actually learning tracks and certifications. And for folks that are not aware, we even have a program around that called Power Up. You know, it's a significant time commitment, but it's a multi-month program where you get active instruction and teaching and peer support, and then get a real certification in Power Platform skills on the other side of it. And we're even now adapting that for customers, large customers, to roll out internally inside of their organizations, in addition to being something that individuals can come to the front door of and ask. So there's a lot of great material out there. But also, nothing beats, you know, just getting into the product, you know, trying it out, tinkering, having a real project that you want to be able to achieve, and then learning along the way to achieving that goal, you know, becomes a really strong way that people learn. And we've seen that pattern work very well out there in the market.
So, Ryan, I am honestly shocked that we've gotten so deep into the podcast and Dr. No has not yet asked you a governance question. So I'm going to ask one on his behalf in all seriousness, right? Because I lived this as a customer and I live this every day with our customers. Many customers, and especially their IT departments, they have security controls in place. They have review processes and policies. And we are moving their cheese, or at least there's a perception that we're moving their cheese with our new development tools, with the Power Platform, and now you introduced AI into the mix as a little bit of a bombshell. So what should IT and global information security teams be thinking about these changes? Can the old world of policies work, or do they need to be revisiting some of their security and governance strategies?
Yeah. Look, I think the cheese moved a long time ago, and people are just coming up to speed with that fact. You know, and I talk to customers all the time, and especially customers sitting in IT and information security roles, and there are really valid concerns here. You know, and I'll talk about the customers that have thousands of low-code practitioners, both professionals and citizens, building thousands of solutions every year inside their companies. And every single time you have that conversation, somebody, you know, crosses that's terrible. I don't want that to happen. I don't want thousands of pieces of software and automation that were not built by IT out there. And, you know, my question to all of them always is, where do you think they came from? You know, it's not like 1,000 people woke up yesterday and just got inspired to build Flappy Bird for Business. You know, it is, these are all pre-existing processes inside of your organization. In most cases, you just couldn't see them before. You know, they looked like files. They looked like email activity. They looked like shadow IT. If you really want to go secure the enterprise, you need to give people a better option than either, you know, wait for my 3-year backlog or be non-compliant. And that's the impossible choice that we've given so many business people for so long, you know, in the spirit of information security, but it really just breeds all kinds of much riskier alternatives, right? So I think, and especially in a world of generative AI, where 1,000 startups just got funded in the last year to go figure it out, and everybody is rushing to go ship something into the market, all the more important to have a viable path forward, a governable path forward, a path forward where it's all happening on one stack under that user's corporate Entra identity, logged in managed environments, reported on through active activity, applied with a data loss prevention policy, routed through an environment strategy, you know, and then all the way down to running on bare metal services in an Azure data center in your region that's geo compliant. There is no other company on the planet that can put that stack together for customers right now than Microsoft and particularly Power Platform for going and implementing generative AI inside the company. It is a much, much more compliant way to go look at this near-term future than really anything else out there on the market. Every other vendor is either using somebody else's model or using somebody else's front end and services. And every single time you do that, you're crossing compliance boundaries and creating governance debt. So this is the time to really take it. But for me, it is, this is how we innovate and reduce risk at the same time. And that's why the only thing we're investing in more right now than AI is continued governance tooling, monitoring tooling, you know, security tooling, because that is so critical to the future of what everybody's going to build here.
You know, I was reading an article from Gartner on this topic actually recently, where so many organizations are responding to the media hype.
Yeah.
And so they're scrambling to create AI governance boards and review boards. And I've definitely participated in some of those. But where Gartner was actually advocating was creating an enablement board. And we could apply the same thing, not just for AI, but for low code as well. Yeah. And not necessarily like a center of excellence per se, but even just looking at your use cases across the board and say, how can we empower our most valuable resources in terms of our people to solve it sooner?
Yeah.
Bringing shadow IT into the light under the purview of IT. And so it's totally true in conversations that we're having now with our customers.
100%.
But Wendy, you know, I'd like to maybe add a point in there and say that although the technology and things that we are doing today is new, Copilot, for example, the methodologies and things along those lines may not necessarily be changed or drastically different from legacy protocols of, say, managing things that were on-prem in very large-scale applications like SAP, Oracle, or whatever those things may be. Those practices that those organizations have established already can still be looked at and applied and not needed to be, say, treated differently for Power Platform. Take your learnings that you have and apply those things.
Right.
Stop treating Power Platform so differently.
Right.
You know, it's an enterprise grade platform. Treat it as such.
Right.
I'm going to double click on that, Ken. Do you think that applies just to the policies and processes or to the technology itself? You know, is it technically different to govern, or are you saying even just your policies and practices?
No, I think it ties into all of it. I mean, Ryan said, like, for example, like when you're talking about building applications, this is not just simply for figuring out food orders.
Right.
Okay. Like an entire business can be run off of a Power App, right? If done properly, right? At an enterprise scale. It can absolutely be done that way. And yes, you do need proper governance and security and things along those lines, but that's an enablement factor to your point.
Yeah.
Right. Not a gate to keep things away from the users. It's the gate that opens everything and allows those folks to do things comfortably, securely, and so on and so forth, so that your security teams are free to go and have more lunch and eat cookies and whatever else. I don't know what security teams do. Give me security professionals.
I think security professionals generally avoid cookies, Ken. Sorry, that's my security dad joke. But no, you're spot on, and I would say, what a lot of people who have a bias around low code typically, you know, look at Power Apps through that lens of, oh, that's just, you know, the toy, or that's three screens over a SharePoint list used by amateurs watching YouTube videos. And, you know, that's true for a segment of usage. But I think if you look at, this is also the platform that Microsoft employs several thousand professional developers who deliver several multi-billion dollar global businesses on top of. Architecturally speaking, all of Dynamics 365 is a Power App built by Microsoft on top of Dataverse, a stack which abstracts away more than 60 underlying Azure services and delivers three nines of availability and high performance and high security compliance on top of it. Most customers don't want to compete with that, you know, by individually rolling their own, you know, and hoping for the best. And in fact, you know, there's a whole lot of people running software, even on Azure, that can't match those levels of performance and availability on their own, even with a dedicated engineering team, you know. And we've built a whole lot of that control and availability and performance management plane on top of it. And so, you know, what's that case for building on top of Power Platform? It's not because it's cool. It's because it's really saving a massive amount of time and money in the maintenance and implementation of real enterprise software. And it's broadening it out to a much wider set of humans who can contribute to it. And so if you look at it in like the macroeconomics of technical debt, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's a very different mindset to look at it through than, you know, oh, I'm a dev. I got a computer science degree. I don't need a low code platform. You know, those are just two fundamentally different mindsets and approaches today.
So I brought it up earlier in the beginning of the podcast, and I feel like any listeners that are still waiting for it are eagerly anticipating what's next. Like, where are we going? Where's the roadmap? I don't want people to get all upset because we never covered this topic.
Right.
What can you share with us, Ryan?
Sure. Well, I'd say there's three main things on our roadmap: Copilot, and Copilot. I'm being a little bit glib, but I think, and governance would be the third, fourth thing. I would say, look, we are just getting started in terms of what it means to transform both developer experiences and user experiences and really break everybody's longstanding assumption of what a business application needs to be. That's an evolution over time, right? But I think, you know, we've just started taking some baby steps of what it means to integrate, you know, Copilot into end user experiences. We're about to launch a lot more of those things that'll just start lighting up for end users who have apps based on Dataverse, you know, to do Q&A and get answers or get summaries inside of those applications. But that's just a starting point, and expect to see over the next year just increasingly more intimately integrated into the flow of work, both in a Power App and when you're in other places, you know, that type of interaction model. And I think we're really starting to push the boundary on what does it mean, you know, to have intelligent experiences that collaborate between humans and co-pilots. And how do those co-pilots become helpful, you know, not just waiting for me to ask a question in a chat on the right-hand side of the rail, but how do they become increasingly more proactive and even be able to take direction and do tasks when I'm not there? You know, and so there becomes a really interesting set of questions and roadmap capabilities on that front. I will say, all of that also means continuing to modernize our interfaces around it. And as people who've been following Power Apps for a while know, you know, we've made a lot of progress recently with modern controls built on the Fluent V9 standards, with massive performance improvements in especially the model app harness, as well as the canvas, you know, with a whole lot of improvement to our collaborative capabilities for both makers and end users. You know, seeing that road through is also a big part of our roadmap. And it very much converges with what does it mean for Copilot to be a collaborator in that space and in that world? And I think the third leg of the stool is about really what we think of as the control plane. You know, what does it mean to manage and secure and deploy and distribute assets across, you know, thousands of use cases in an organization, but even for one development team building one solution and bringing it to market, how do we have a really world-class experience end to end, from design to deployment to monitoring to debugging to supporting? You know, we've got a lot of energy going into that space as well, and I'm pretty excited about what's coming up in the year ahead as well.
Awesome. I do have a follow-up question, even though I'm getting mean glances from Wendy and Ken to hurry it up because I'm exhausting my mic time. So we've talked about organizations, you know, putting in governance plans for Copilot and rolling out these enterprise apps. What about enablement of an organization to increase adoption and awareness of Copilot and what's possible?
Yeah.
How do you see that moving forward?
No, that's happening as well. And I would say the most forward-thinking organizations are doing it. EY, for example, recently enabled Power Platform Copilots for 170,000 people across the firm, and are running big campaigns internally to get them to use it and to try it on and take advantage, because they're realizing, gosh, if I can have more people be more successful automating processes, modernizing systems, getting things out of Excel spreadsheets, you know, I am bringing the efficiency of the firm forward, and I'm reducing risk at the same time. And so I think we are starting to see that concept of the center for enablement, not the center for excellence or the center for no, which is what a lot of these safety boards are sort of set up as. Like, you know, I think the real idea is, how do we get people to take advantage of it? Obviously in a way that is safe and is responsible, but with the goal being get the value from it. And I think that's the big mentality, is what is the goal of your committee? Is it a defense committee or an offense committee? Every good offense has to not turn the ball over, to not belabor a sports metaphor, but it's like, how do you create the right expectation of the goal of the outcome for the organization? And how are you going to measure that? You know, we've got a customer running a small nonprofit in the Washington state area whose explicit goal is, I want to go triple the amount of services I'm providing to my community in the next 3 years and not hire an additional human. Like, that's a great goal. Awesome. And I think I can do that specifically with Copilot, and by putting Copilot into my solutions and Power Platform, and by, you know, extending the reach of what I can build using the platform. That's a great thesis. So if it works for EY and it works for a small nonprofit, it'll work for every other customer in between. You just have to be intentional about what you want out of the other side.
So Ryan, I'm going to put you on the hook here and give you a tough question.
Ooh, all right. Bring it on.
How do you calculate value? How do you prove the ROI of the Power Platform?
That is tough. And that's why we have smart people like analysts at Forrester Research who have gone and talked to 33 customers that all spend more than $1 million a year on Power Apps licenses and have done an economic impact study. And what's really interesting, that study is on our website. You can download it. But if you read the details, you know, they say the aggregate customer not only recoups their $1 million investment in the first year, they get an additional $1.2 million of payback on top in the first 12 months. And then that you know, ROI ratio has a triple digit compounding growth rate over the ensuing 3 years, even as they ramp up additional spend on the platform. Okay, so how do you quantify that? You know, they bring it back to a couple of different factors. First and foremost is the actual ROI delivered to the business. How much time are you saving in operational roles because you've eliminated manual effort, or you've made things easier? But then even from an IT perspective, you know, this enables kind of a new and different type of economics. You know, when I cover a user with a Power Apps premium license, that human can use an unlimited number of Power Apps for the same price per user per month. And so that may feel expensive for the first app, but if I look at it in aggregate, that means the marginal software cost of every new app I deploy is zero. And it means the unit economics get really good at scale. And that's how a lot of customers are thinking about this. It's not, I don't want to do this because I want to deploy one workload. I want to do it because I want to go modernize an entire software estate. And if I have to modernize an entire software estate in the old model of investment, where I have to go pencil out software cost of every single workload and calculate VM capacity load for every piece of custom development, I'm just going to move way too slow. If I greenlight the capability for the organization and I can deploy, then past a certain minimum threshold of payback, everything else is pure ROI. And, you know, that is a huge benefit. On top of that, I'm able to consolidate some of these really niche point solution SaaS products or one-off things that I've deployed and developed in the past onto that platform, you know, and in the process, not only reduce cost, but also reduce risk, you know, because that thing that a consultant built for me 8 years ago is not getting .NET Core patches. It's not you know, fitting into my data lake strategy, and it's not, you know, governable in the same way that everything else. So if I can start to move those things and modernize those things onto a standard platform that has a whole team of Microsoft engineers and a broader platform maintaining it, then my go-forward cost over the next several years is much, much more advantageous. So there's a pretty deep framework for that. And I think for some of our largest customers who are really looking at, you know, wow, this looks like a pretty expensive multi-year commitment, not just for the licenses, but the capacity to take it on. We actually have tools. We have a business value assessment template that's sort of based on the methodology Forrester used, where we can go make very specific assessments for individual customers. And that's important to do. And then to keep yourself honest with, you know, as you go through it, you know, 6 months in, 12 months in, did we get what we thought we would? And where do we stand? And what do we need to learn from that as we go?
Ryan, I also want to capitalize on Sean's theme of what's coming. And I heard Copilot, Copilot, Copilot. Yeah. But there's other tech trends. There's machine learning, yep. AR, VR, the Internet of Things. So what are we thinking about that space with the Power Platform? And is there current investments or maybe future investments that you're allowed to share that we can talk about?
So I would say from an AI perspective, I mean, so much of that world is being upended right now between what was previously very narrowly trained and pre-trained, you know, sort of trained models on specific data to pre-trained models that are much more effective. A lot of the work right now is how do you, you know, fine tune in real time or few shot optimize those models to do very domain specific things. So I'd say from an ML perspective, I think that world is getting turned upside down right alongside the rest of AI. But how does that Copilot do better prediction, right? How does it look at the existing data you've got and say, hey, here are customers that are going to churn, or here are things that I expect to fail inspection based on other things that failed inspection? Absolutely, there's some interesting data science and thinking going in there. On the other tech front, you know, I will say we are continuing to invest very heavily in mobile and frontline workers. And that's an area where, you know, there's a huge potential for value in general with software, but also specifically with generative AI. And, you know, folks that have been watching us closely, you know, we recently previewed a full offline stack for Canvas Power Apps. I mean, we've been running that generally available under model for a while. We've made a lot of improvements to the ability to wrap a Power App and custom brand it and distribute it to mobile devices. We are also doing work right now to render those components and controls truly as native controls on devices for much better performance and UX. And we are looking at right now how to bring a lot of this Copilot goodness into that package. And we're seeing more and more customers, major retailers around the world with tens of thousands of frontline workers, you know, taking a big bet on Power Apps because it has all these other benefits, but it also is very transformational for their end users. So I would say expect more from us on that front. And that naturally bleeds into things like assisted and AR technologies. In fact, you can already put a MR model into Power Apps and, you know, visualize something in three-dimensional space or do a measurement control. But I think that's just one piece of a much bigger picture of how do you make frontline workers much more productive in a hands-free or limited hand type of scenario.
I'm going to squeeze in one more follow-up question before we land the plane here. You mentioned the ability to wrap Power Apps and deploy yep. them natively. Is that a strategy direction change? Do we still see the value of Power Apps within the mobile Power App itself? Or do we think we're yeah. going to start seeing more Power Apps go that direction in the future? Is that where you're encouraging developers to go?
Well, I think the use cases are very different. You know, if I have a departmental app and it's the 17 of us and I want to put something on a mobile device, it's actually a huge advantage for you to just have Power Apps, the container from your company. You log into it with AAD and you use it, you know it's a trusted source. You know, if I'm a global retailer deploying to 30,000 frontline workers, I want that thing to have my logo on it. I want to probably mix some native code into it, you know, but I still want to get the benefit of not having to do all of the low-level iOS and Android management myself. I still want an app package that can run on the web as well as on mobile. That's why Power makes a lot of sense. And so, you know, I think we'll see both coexist. We're not getting rid of the Power Apps mobile app anytime soon. When I wrap it, I'm just literally taking a version of that mobile client that used to be called Power Apps with a purple icon on top. And I'm subsetting the apps that show up within it. I'm putting my logo on it, and then I'm distributing it my own way. And so there's a big asset there for sort of the centrally deployed, you know, company-wide application. I don't think that completely obviates the need for more citizen developed or bottom-up use cases.
So Ryan, your dream guest that we wanted to have on for a while. And so I'm so glad that we were able to have this conversation, but unfortunately we do have to wrap up the episode. So thank you so much for joining. We're going to have tons of links out to all the things we talked about. And I almost feel like this is required listening for everybody internally and externally, because this has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us, Ryan. We really, really are excited.
Thanks for great questions. questions, and thanks for doing what you all do in this community. It's an honor to be here with you.
Awesome. Thank you.